to listen to older voices, a program produced for Uniting Melba and podcast through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you through their stories, life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. Hello, this is Listen to Older Voices, and I'm Rob Greaves, and it's a pleasure to bring you another program in this ongoing series. This is part one of a three-part program featuring the life and time story of 98-year-old Patricia Smith. Born in England in 1920, Patricia starts from her earliest memories, including the story of how a Catholic mother came to marry a Protestant English soldier. Class distinction played a big part in the life in England at this time, and Patricia makes it very clear that being a working class family with eight children, they really were considered as poor working class. But she still believes she had the best life. As a young teen, she was offered into service of a rich family, which was the only way her mother could improve Patricia's prospects. She ended up working for the family of Commander Pitcairn, whose ancestors gave name to the Pitcairn Island. Her prospects with that family came to a crashing end with the arrival of World War II. Patricia becomes a nurse and was in the city of Portsmouth for most of World War II and experienced the bombs of the Germans. But it was then that she met the man who would become her husband, Reg Smith, and we learn of the circumstances by which they both came to Australia at war's end. Pat, first of all, thank you very much for inviting me into your home, and thank you for being on the program. Can we start by asking you, when were you born and whereabouts were you born?
I was born in 1920 in Portsmouth in England.
So you migrated to Australia then, obviously.
Came out when I was 20. 23, something like that, yeah.
So there's a few years then in your life, 23 of them, in fact, before you got out here.
Yeah.
What would be your earliest memory then?
Of England.
Yeah, what, of your life?
Oh, well, yes, of course. My mother was Irish, Kitty O'Connor from County Kildare.
Oh, don't get more Irish than that.
My father was an English soldier that went over to stop all the trouble over there and brought her back to England.
Right.
And then they got married, and she was Catholic and my father was Protestant. The Irish family were very annoyed marrying a Protestant and a soldier. And then the family in Ireland had a potato famine. Mm. And my father had a business then, came out of the army and had a business building, and he got the family over from Ireland, gave them all homes and set them up on their feet. And he was wonderful, wonderful father and mother.
Because that period was a difficult period anyway for a lot of people, because it was the Great Depression was around those years as well as the
depression,
famine, wasn't it?
Yes.
Do you have any memories of those times, of the hard times, or were you too young to recollect?
Oh, no, we had hard times because Dad building... When there was the winter was on and the snow on the ground, Dad couldn't build. So I've seen him cleaning snow from paths and earning money like that,
right,
just to buy bread for us, really.
We were quite poor
in those days,
yes.
And eight children.
Mm.
And Mum being Catholic, of course.
Yes, lots of children was the way.
We had six boys, mm-hmm, and then the girls, and one sister died just before I was born with pneumonia, and she was only two. And Mum and Dad, it took them a long time to get over that, and she was beautiful. And I was quite ugly when I was born because Mum had cried that much, and you know, she wasn't happy at all with me. So anyway, we had the best life. We really did.
Were you then the oldest daughter or were there
others?
Yes,
I was the oldest,
so your young sisters looked up to you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
What sort of person was your mum? What was she like?
She had red hair, terrible temper, and spoke Gaelic whenever she was cross. So we didn't understand. And my dad was a lovely, calm English. He was a gentleman. He was gorgeous, yeah. We were very lucky to have such wonderful parents. And, you know, like Saturdays, we all had to work. And Dad had made aprons. My brothers did the silver, cleaned the silver. And I had the mangle, mangle I had to help Mum. We all worked on a Saturday, and then we went to the pictures. Then Dad would take us out as a treat.
That would have been a real treat because, again, money was hard to get, wasn't it? So,
that
was a big treat.
It was a treat.
Yes.
And then Sundays, we would have a roast meal. And Dad could make a meal out of nothing, you know, wartime and all that sort of thing. But, they were the best parents we could ever have, really. And on Sundays we had the roast. And then Dad would read from, like, lovely books, Charles Dickens, and sort of educated us, really.
Mm. Something that probably doesn't happen enough these days with young kids, does it?
Oh, not together all round the table. No, it's lovely all together.
You mentioned about the mangle, which was a way of squeezing the water out of clothes.
Yes. It'd
be safe to probably assume that Mum had very little in the way of conveniences.
Nothing.
What did she cook on? What did she cook on? What sort of stove? Was it a wood stove?
No, gas stove.
She had gas.
Yeah, did have gas in those days. Yeah.
Right. And, of course, there was no television.
Oh, God, no.
Did you have a radio?
We had a gramophone with a great big horn, I remember. And every Friday for the weekend, Dad would go and collect Granny O'Connor and bring her back to the house. And then he'd put this record on, the Irish dancing. And so Granny and Mum did the Irish dancing up and down and... We really enjoyed all that. Yes, the kids all sat around and we learned how to dance.
As you're telling the story, you've got this beautiful smile on your face, so it obviously brings back wonderful memories.
Oh, God, yes, it was lovely togetherness, yeah.
And this is Listen to Older Voices. Ageless Stories on Ageless Radio.
You would have gone to school. What was primary school like for you in those days?
Oh, yes, it was school. I didn't go so much to school because if Mum was sick, I had to look after the kids or take them to school. And I really did have to look after the kids while Mum took in washing even.
Right.
And that was a scrubbing board.
That was tough.
Like, shocking.
Yes.
And my dad was working. He was a worker as well, so...
What sort of work was he doing at that stage? Do you remember?
After the war, little odd jobs he did. And not so little. we'd go to towns like, or a little village, Rowland's Castle in Hampshire, and Dad would get the order of building 20 or 30 houses.
So he was a builder?
Yes. So, but wintertime was no good.
Why was
he couldn't
that?
Work with the snow and the ice. And,
right.
And so he'd have to do other menial jobs, you know.
Yes.
But we never went hungry, never. And they were the best parents you could ever have, yeah. Taught us a lot in respect and everything that kids don't seem to know nowadays.
Taught you the value of things too, I bet.
Oh dear, yes, of course.
Especially when you come from a period when it was so hard to get things, you really treasure what you do get.
Oh, you did, yeah.
And how, I suppose at birthdays and Christmases, gifts were very small and...
Oh, yes. You'd get oranges or an apple more than anything in your sock.
So what did you have as a young girl to play with? What toys did you have? A doll?
Dad would make things. He was quite clever like that.
Right.
He'd make wooden things for us. And
yes.
Tops and yo-yos and things like that we had, yeah.
When kids go to school, they obviously go there to learn, but they also make friends. Now, you said you didn't go to school all that often. So did you manage to find friends around your own age?
Oh, yes, yes. There was too much going on with our family. You know, we all were into sport.
Ah.
And Dad was in the army. He was a boxer. And he fought and he helped as a sparring mate for Bombardier Bailey Wells, who apparently was the head boxer in England at that time.
Right.
So he'd go in the garage and teach the boys how to box, and even there was 11 years difference between my sister and I. There was only the two girls and the rest boys, so we had to stand up for ourselves, and Dad taught us as well.
I bet you
and
did.
We were spiteful. Yeah.
Oh. Well, with all those brothers, you had to stand up for yourself, didn't you? Yes.
And the fact was that they'd come home and tell about their girlfriends that they'd been out with, and you learnt that you were a bit haughty with boys because your brothers had told you all these stories, or you heard them talking about the girls. And there wasn't really a lot of respect with some of them. And so I learned a lot from my brothers, really, how to be distant. And then I seemed to get all the boys.
Funny about that. Isn't it strange how that works? Yes. So you didn't, your primary school experience was that you didn't go as often as you probably should have or could have.
Mm.
Did you go to secondary school though?
No, no.
Nope. So your primary school was it?
Yes, I was home a lot, and you left school when you were 14.
Of course.
And so I went to a mum, wanted me to be a lady. So I was sent to the posh people. We were the poor. We were the working class.
The workers, yes.
And really, it was very snobbish in England, very snobby. And you called everyone Mr. and Mrs. And there was, you know, no laughter or anything with bosses.
It was all proper.
Oh, very proper.
Yes. You mentioned that she sent you to the posh people. What did you mean?
People that you worked for, and people that went to, well, as you said, with private schools, they were different to us.
Right. So was this to try and teach you to be a lady?
Oh, Mum sent me to, when they wanted a maid anywhere, for instance, she sent me to a neighbour wanted a maid to go and take over 2 weeks' holiday the other maid had, and would I take their place. And so I went to this Pitcairn Have you heard of the Pitcairn Islands?
Oh, Pitcairn, yes.
Well, the ancestors from that, Commander Pitcairn and his wife, and I went there for the 2 weeks as a maid, and Mr. and Mrs. Pitcairn were absolutely wonderful, and she taught me so much. And she had two daughters and a son. The son was a policeman, and one daughter married a very posh chap up in the army and a commander or something. And the other one, Peggy, she had to go to the finishing school like the posh did in England. If you were rich, you were finished off overseas in Europe. And she went to Paris because she was a bit of an artist. And she was only a very young girl. But she met another artist, Claude, I forget his other name, Claude. And the message came back while I was working with them that she was coming home. And then she came home and she liked me. And she was going to have a baby, getting married to this Frenchman, and wanted me as a nanny. Right. She would teach me French and everything, and I'd have the nanny's hat and the lace and learn French. And, it was going to be wonderful.
That must have made you feel really good.
That was in 38, yes. I think it was.
So you were about 18 then. Yes.
So, I was so thrilled, yes. She'd go back and arrange it all, and then someone would come over and meet me at Dover, and off I would go to Paris. And I couldn't wait, and my dad said, no, you're not going.
Oh.
Hitler's taking over Poland and doing this, that and the other, and you're
right,
not going.
Of course.
So that was aborted.
So it wasn't that he didn't want you to go because he didn't want you to have that experience. He was frightened.
He knew I would never probably come back if the Germans took over.
Did you understand that at that time, or were you angry that he didn't let you go?
I was angry, yes, because I had lots of opportunities, but my dad was very wise and it worked out all that whatever Dad said was right,
indeed.
You know.
So you were still in England then when the Second World War started?
Oh, yes. And then I became a nurse in St Mary's Hospital in Portsmouth.
What was that like for you?
God. The bombing was on because it had got into Paris and Germany, you know, all European countries, Poland, everywhere. And then they decided to bomb from France, and they had to come over the water. It wasn't very far from Portsmouth to France. And I remember waking up one night and the thumping. It's a thumping noise, and it's all these planes going over to London, but they had to come over Portsmouth, and we had a great big common, they called it. It was a big park in front of the sea, and the port, Portsmouth, had the biggest port, and they had all the ships there. And so they bombed as well on the way to London.
Of course.
But the noise of the drone of the planes going to London was deafening. It was awful. And then when they'd bombed, and we'd stopped as many as we could in England, in Portsmouth, and when they finished bombing London and all around London, they came back and there was the empty noise of a plane.
Different noise.
You could tell the difference every time a plane was loaded. Yes. So you dashed down into shelters.
Listen to Older Voices, Living History on Ageless Radio.
You mentioned that Portsmouth was a very big dock, lots of boats. Oh, so it must have been a major target for the bombers as well. You must have been in a lot of bombing.
Oh, we were. Yes, we did.
Were you ever frightened?
Yeah, of course, yes. But you had your helmet. You went everywhere with a helmet and a gas mask.
Right.
That was your handbag, your gas mask. And they provided that, the council. And yes, we were well looked after, really.
Did you have a shelter at home or did you
Oh, no, my dad made the best shelter.
He did?
Yeah. He wouldn't go into it, but he got all of us down into it. But I wasn't often home. I had to dash off to the hospital, which was only about 10 minutes walk to get to my hospital.
So being a nurse during the war, you would have seen some fairly awful things then.
Well, I
did. You would have to deal with it.
I did, but you sort of forget that. But you saw a lot of funny things too.
Can you recall any of those things?
People were absolutely wonderful during the war. You all helped one another and any food or anything, we all helped one another. It was wonderful.
Very much a community spirit, wasn't it?
Oh, we were different altogether. Yeah,
yes.
We were. But the nursing, yes, that was bad too because the dear old grandmas, the pregnant girls and babies and all went downstairs where we were safe and we had to stay up top. And I had to look after, with another nurse, 42 dear old grannies.
Goodness me.
And we were right in the city of Portsmouth. And the ward doors blew off with the first lot of bombs. So I'm trying to put curtains or blankets up so that they couldn't see our town hall on fire.
Yes.
And all the flames were coming out of the top of the the tower in Portsmouth Town Hall. That was a terrible sight.
So yeah. You mentioned you left Britain around 1942. Was it 1942?
No, it was 1939, 40.
How old were you?
49.
49, so it was after the war. Right.
By then, my husband, I'd met
Yes. His name?
I was married by Roy.
How did you meet Smith. Roy?
He was with his mother, she was a Red Cross nurse like me. And that's how I met him. He was on a week's leave before he was going overseas. He was an air gunner, warrant officer air gunner. And, poor chap. We met for 1 week and then he was overseas and wrote to me. And then he was away bombing mostly Italy. And then, strangely enough, I went to Italy and they talked about the English mob of Air Force that flew over and bombed different places and tried to get Mussolini and all that. Oh, very exciting it was during the war.
Were you ever fearful for Roy's life?
Oh, we wrote to each other for about 2 or 3 years. Then he came back and then we got married within a week or so.
So you knew by then he was the one?
Oh, yes, I did, yes.
Did that happen
because
quickly?
You had so many Yanks and Canadians and, you know. No, there wasn't anyone but Roy, really. And yes, I met some wonderful people, though, wonderful men, too. They respect nurses, too.
So when Roy was demobbed, was it his idea to come to Australia?
Yes, it was, because he had a rest period. He'd done, I think it was 82 bad missions, you know, out. And what was the story with him there? Yes, he was stationed with Number 10 Squadron, which was an Aussie squadron at Mountbatten in Plymouth. And he just loved the Aussies. They were so free and so different to you know, everyone in England.
Mm.
And he really enjoyed that. And there was a lovely chap that he was with, and he suggested that we, after the war, after it all finished, we should go to Australia. And boy, oh, well, he was mad about that. Yes, he'd love to do that. And we would go to Broken Hill.
How did you feel about leaving England and going to this place called Australia?
It was either Australia or Canada.
But were you happy leaving your family in England? Was that okay?
Oh, no,
you?
That was sad, yeah, very sad. Mum and Dad came to Southampton and waved us off on the ship, you know. We were 10 pam.
10 pam poms. There were many of them.
Bludgers.
Do join Patricia and I next week for the second part of the story, including the trip by boat to Australia and why she fell in love with this country so quickly. We learn of the circumstances by which her husband Ray passed away. We also learn about her working with disabled young men and her return trip to England. All this and more next week on Listen to Older Voices with Patricia Smith. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Wesley Mission Victoria. The program is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is brought to you through the Toorak Times.